They missed my, the best remarks ever, but okay. Anyway, we're going to be starting the end of the budget change proposal cycle for budget year 22-23. And so welcome. This will actually be split over two meetings. Today we're going to, we'll talk about this in a second, a little bit more. We're going to do kind of hear about the budget change concepts, and then we'll vote on those after we hear from it, after we get the May revise. First, a little housekeeping. This meeting is open to the public, and we are being recorded, as you just heard. We are conducting this meeting via video conference. Members of the public can watch us and via a listen-only video feed. As a reminder, members may need to view material to the public. We have a lot of materials for today, and you'll see members looking and watching. Correct that. Let me start again. For those of you watching us on a video feed, there's a lot of, as you can tell, a lot of materials for us to be looking at. A lot of us are looking at those on multiple screens, so from time to time you'll see us facing away and what have you. We are not being cavalier about the meeting. We just need to look at the materials directly. Budget committee members and others speaking on the call, please remember to unmute yourself prior to speaking, as we'll be trying to mute those who are speaking, who are not speaking, to keep the background noise down. Also, if we forget to mute you, could you please make sure you are muted when you're not speaking? For those who are speaking, whether you're asking a question or presenting information, please identify yourself by providing your name for the recording itself. Also, if you are taking notes like I do on the computer, if you could mute yourself while you're typing, because it's loud and disturbing also, as I have been reminded a couple of times. With that, if I could ask Ms. Cowan to take roll.
Judge Rubin.
I'm here.
Judge Mormon.
I'm here.
Judge Botke.
I'm here.
Justice Fujisaki.
Here.
Justice Hill.
Here.
Judge Hopp.
Here.
And Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Thank you. We have all members accounted for.
Ms. Cowan, thank you so much for doing that for me. All right, let's get into the business part of our meeting. First of all, we have minutes to review from January 5th, 2021. They are on page three of your materials. And I was wondering if anybody had a motion for approval.
I'll move to approve. This is Judge Mormon.
Mormon makes the motion. Is there a second?
Dasaki second.
Justice Fujisaki seconds. We have a motion and a second. Now, open to discussion. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Nays, abstentions. All right, it passes. Thank you. Let's move on now to our action item. So, as I discussed a little bit at the outset, we need to ultimately, we're going to have to make the determination about which comment the concepts need to be moved forward. Budget change concepts need to move forward for further review, and to provide other entities the opportunity to provide input on those concepts, other advisory committees. So between now and the time we meet, which will be within a couple of days after the May revise drops from the governor's office on May 14th, we will be having a chance to kind of send these, what we're reviewing today, out to advisory bodies that we think need to be looking at them. We'll take our secondary review. Like I say, we'll set the actual date by, I think, doodle poll. It'll be within a day or two after May 14th. And excuse me. And after at that meeting, we'll make our final decisions about which of these concepts will be going to fully developed budget change proposals for submission to the Department of Finance for 2022-20, for the 2022-23 budget. So what we're gonna do is, we have, as you can see from the schedule, or maybe you cannot, but we have multiple staff here, a lot of staff here. I want to thank staff out of the gate and those people presenting out of the gate. talk about all 26 of the budget change concepts, but before we do that, and I think to give us some context for what it is we're going to be, some context for our discussions as we go forward, I'm going to ask if Mr. Wardlaw is here and Mr. Theodorovic are here to kind of talk a little bit about the budget picture as we move forward, especially coming out of budget 21-22 and going into 22-23. With that, gentlemen.
No, thank you very much, Judge, and it's a pleasure to be here with all of you today. It is important, I think, as we always talk about budget planning, we need to understand the context under which these issues are being considered. When the budget came out on January 8th, and we were pleased to see some proposals that we had, that the JBC had recommended the council be submitted in the budget. We were happy to see a $72.2 million funding for CPI, that was based on the CPI calculation, but court operations funding, self-help, some important issues there. But we were further happy to see that in February that there was the announcement by legislative leadership and the governor of the restoration of the $200 million budget cut that was taken in the 2021 fiscal year. And so that's great news for us, obviously, and really makes it a much better budget just within a month and a half from release in January to February to where we stand now. But we have to be mindful that when the budget was released in January, there was some slides and some discussions about future years. And that's what we're looking at right now. We're looking at the 22-23 fiscal year and what we're doing with our proposals. And so what we have is we have a number of proposals that you'll see that reach well in excess of $1.6 billion. And so that's a large price tag. But when we look at the structure of the budget and the framework, the out years, and we're talking about it, 22, 23, 23, 24, 24, 25, is the budget horizon that the Department of Finance proposed or showed in their budget documents. They have a structural deficit in 22, 23 of $7.6 billion, in large part because expenditures are projected to grow faster than revenues. And by 24, 25, that is forecast to grow to over $11 billion. And so a statement that they have is that this will constrain the state's ability to undertake expanded ongoing commitments. And so while that is subject to update come May revision, I think we do need to be mindful of the fiscal condition of the state as they're building their budgets in the out years and what we may be considering submitting to the council for consideration for ultimate submission to the Department of Finance in September. So good news now for our budget, obviously with the most recent updates, but as we're building the future budget and those requests, we definitely need to be mindful of the view that the Department of Finance has in terms of deficits starting in 22-23. Again, subject to change in May, and that's why we are having that May revision happen, and then the next meeting of the JBBC to consider what should go to the council at that point.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Theodorovic. Mr. Wardlaw, anything you wanted to add?
Thank you, Judge. No, I think Z did a nice job in setting the context for today's discussion. We will, as Z said, have an opportunity to see what the governor's revised fiscal projections are in May. Before final decisions on which concepts will move forward as full-blown budget change proposals for the council's consideration.
Very well. Ms. Mueller, anything? You fooled me. She's got her name on a camera, but she's not. All right. Very well. Thank you all for that. So, the trick for our committee, unlike other committees, I think, is that while everything is okay now, what we are going to be working on is a time when we're projecting some choppy water. So let's then start with our review of the actual 26 budget concepts. We are not going to be voting on them today. I think the better thing for us to do is to wait until after the, as I said, the May revise drops, and that will give us a better understanding of what kind of the expectations are going forward and whether or not these projections are going to be holding up for the out year that we're looking at. So with that, our first three budget concepts are 22-01, 02, and 03, and I think Ms. Speed.
Oh, Josh Rubin.
Oh, wait, we have public comment, which we circulated to everybody, and I hope everybody got that. And then, Zlatko, you wanted to say something.
The only reminder of the public comment.
Oh.
You've covered it. Thank you.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. Ms. Speed, are you with us?
I am, Judge Rubin.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, sorry. I'll be doing the three appellate court BCCs. We'll start with Proposition 66, Costs in the Court of Appeals. This is a request that you saw last year as well, and that was actually eventually approved last year, requesting 14.5 positions, equating to about $9 million. Ongoing for funding to handle new workload and costs related to Proposition 66 implementation, including appointed counsel, investigation, record storage, technology upgrade, as well as personnel within the courts of appeal to implement Proposition 66. That is a very quick summary. I'm happy to take any questions or if Justice Hill would like to add anything to that.
Hill, anything?
That's a great summary, Laura. I would just note that this is somewhat of a coming tsunami that will be hitting the appellate courts. And although it is not quite here yet, it certainly will be here if and when we get this money. And so we're hopeful that we have it so that we can deal with all of those cases. And it was a very thoughtful approach put together by Justice Humes and Justice Greenwood and JCC staff, and Laura was integral in that process, and that took months to come up with the discrete costs that would be facing the court. So obviously we will be hoping that down the road this money will be forthcoming. Thanks, Laura.
All right, Ms. Speed, Appellate Security.
Appellate Court Security as a request for $1.537 million general fund ongoing to fund seven additional California Highway Patrol Judicial Protection Section officers for courts of appeal courthouses throughout the state.
Yes, so
I would just note that without going into great detail in terms of court security, there are deficiencies that have been identified that are of concern, and in today's environment, those deficiencies cause even greater concern. And so this is something that the APJs and others feel is necessary. And we hope that can move forward as well.
Thank you. And just a reminder to the public, if you see the members moving back and forth very quickly, we have about 100 pages of attachments to this list, which is the actual concept written up, and people are sometimes flipping back and forth just to remind themselves of specifics of each of the concepts. Thank you. And Ms. Speed, finally, on the court-appointed counsel program.
Sure. Court-appointed counsel program is seeking $6.4 million in the next fiscal year and ongoing for two different components, $5.1 million general fund for a $12 rate increase for non-capital appeal appointments. These are for the what we call panel attorneys, those that get appointed for indigent counsel at the appellate court level. They last got a $10 hour an increase in 16-17. And then $1.3 million for a 7% increase to the five appellate project offices annual contracts. This is something that did appear in the governor's January of 2020 version of the budget pre-pandemic. It did get pulled out when all the changes were happening during the pandemic at that time.
All right, thank you.
I would just note, we hope that this does move forward. These attorneys truly are a vital part of our access to justice, and without these attorneys in the system, and we will lose them if we can't provide a an hourly wage that keeps them interested in representing those unable to afford it. We need this desperately, and I think that the governor's office has certainly identified this as a concern, and we hope that it moves forward sooner than later.
All right, thank you. To the committee members, any questions for Ms. Speed or Justice Hill? All right, very well, thank you. Ms. Speed, thank you so much. And also thank you just for generally the hard work you've been doing all throughout the year and supporting the community. Thank you. All right, we're going to jump down now to concept 16. And we've been trying to group these by presenters, so there may be a little jumping around if you're following along. We're going to jump now to the budget items or concept item 16. This is HCRC's case team staffing establishment of their LA office. And with that, we're going to call on John Larson. Mr. Larson, you're here and go ahead.
Thank you, Justice Rubin.
Thank you for today.
I did an on-field promotion. Sorry. It's a habit given who I've worked with in the recent past. Sure, you deserve it. To meet the increased workload caused by Prop 66, or the Habeas Corpus Resource Center is requesting over a three-year period measured growth in HCRC staff of 70 positions, and that's a three-year total of $12.4 million in general fund, $11.5 million of which would be ongoing, and $900,000 one time. As part of this, in addition to attorneys and paralegals, investigators, and case assistants, which this would fund, eventually leading to 15 additional case teams to address the backlog of men and women awaiting appointment of counsel. This would also provide funds to establish and cover lease costs for an additional office in Los Angeles County, to have access to the Superior Courts, attorneys, and legal resources in Southern California, where the largest proportion of backlogged habeas cases will proceed. And so currently HCRC has authorized positions of 88 FTEs, which includes 34 position attorneys, because statute authorizes up to 34 attorneys to be hired by HCRC currently. This would require a change to government code section 68661. This was part of a sort of omnibus, if you will, Prop 66 request last year that was put together and approved going forward. So this is a request that's coming back from last year. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Mike Kursik, who is our executive director, is also available to take questions.
Outstanding. Are there any questions for Mr. Larson or the executive director? I see Justice Fujisaki. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for being with us. So do you have, does HCRC currently have open positions that are funded but not filled?
There are some positions. We right now have an overall vacancy rate of 20%. That is actually, you know, we need to have about a 15 to 18% vacancy rate in order to meet our payroll. That's fairly typical for a government entity, similar to the Judicial Council. There are open attorney positions at the moment. HCRC was in the midst of doing a recruitment. We recruit attorney positions in groups, as well as investigators and paralegals, so that they can be trained in as a class, if you will, because the training is pretty intensive. And last March, recruitment had gotten underway. I believe there were some interviews. However, with the pandemic and the shutdown, and because there wouldn't be new cases, and there would be the situation in which the HCRC was in, those recruitments couldn't go forward at that time. But they will resume after we open up again, and the regular case flow from the courts is established.
So I guess my question is, have you been getting the applicants for your position?
Since that was before my time, I'll turn this over to Mike, but my understanding was yes, that there were recruitments underway, and unfortunately we couldn't continue through the process because the work was so disrupted, and in terms of the training and the onboarding that would be required of new attorneys.
Mr. Herzog? You're muted, sir.
Hi, good questions, just Fujisaki. I just want to emphasize that one of the reasons private counsel doesn't take these cases because they can't do them on their own. They are very time extensive. They require abandoning the rest of your practice and focusing full time on this one case. When HCRC does a recruitment, we get dozens of applicants because individuals who are either qualified to do these cases or will be qualified to do these cases once they get trained and come up to speed at HCRC are wanting to participate in post-conviction capital defense work, but they can't and won't do it on their own, which is why there's been private counsel has not taken these cases. So there, every time we've done a recruitment, we get dozens and dozens of qualified applicants to fill our very few attorney vacancies.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, seeing none, and thank you very much, Mr. Larson and Mr. Hurst. It was a pleasure to see you both, and stay safe.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go back now into order. Let's go to item dash 04 with Mr. Kofroth talking about our Phoenix system BCC.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Doug Kofroth. I'm the Director of Accounting and Procurement for the Judicial Council. Our request is related to the trial court's Phoenix system. The Phoenix system is the accounting, Phoenix system is the accounting and procurement, banking, and budget system for all 58 trial courts. It's also the system for running payroll for 17 of the trial courts, and we have plans to increase that number of courts on the payroll system to over 20 in the near future. What we're asking for is $1.74 million in one-time costs and $960,000 in ongoing costs. 2 years ago, the governor and the legislature approved a BCP to do a major upgrade to Phoenix, to the software and the infrastructure. That BCP contemplated a two-step upgrade, and this request is the second step in that upgrade. We're currently upgrading the Phoenix system with the funds from that previous BCP, and that upgraded system will be deployed at the end of May of this year, which means that we're going to finish on time and within our budget. The upgraded system includes a temporary component of from the software vendor SAP. That temporary component allows the payroll solution to continue to function. SAP has said that they are only going to support that temporary solution through the year 2025. So this request would allow us to implement SAP's final solution before that 2025 deadline. This proposal also includes three staff for the Judicial Council IT group that supports the Phoenix system. The IT support for the SAP system is unique because SAP has its own programming language and a unique infrastructure. The staffing level in this group has not changed since 2008-2009. The new SAP solution offers many opportunities for improvements and efficiencies. However, SAP developers are necessary to recognize most of those efficiencies. Also, the judicial branch has had a focus on innovation and data analytics, and so we have a backlog of requests from the courts to provide integration and access to data in Phoenix. So the resources in this BC will help us implement and maintain those efficiencies, as well as respond to the trial court's new requests for integration. And then the last component of this request is an increase in operating expenses and equipment for that group. It covers some of the software and equipment costs that are resulting from our current upgrade, and it covers the expenses related to any of the new staff if we're able to get those. And so that's my summary of our proposal, and I can answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Judge Brody, anything you wanted to add? Seeing none.
No, thank you.
I was just being courteous.
As is your way.
Yeah. Took out everything out of me. That's the last of it for the meeting. All right. Any questions for Mr. Cockroth or Judge Brody? All right, Mr. Cockroth, thank you so much, and for all your hard work on that project. Thank you. Moving on now to two budget change concepts. This is dash 05 and dash 20. We've asked Ms. Deppner to join us, and I think she's here, and we'll turn it over to her.
Thank you. Good afternoon. The first proposal, 2205, is for additional funding for self-help centers in the trial court. Court-based self-help centers complete approximately 1 million transactions each year, and this year quickly pivoted to remote services so they could provide assistance to court users. This proposal requests an additional $22 million in general funds in fiscal year 2022 and 23 and ongoing, to meet needs identified by court-based self-help centers to expand their services, particularly in assistance to critical civil case types such as housing, consumer debt, and small claims. The proposal also makes provisions to increase efficiencies and effectiveness by expanding online interactive resources for self-represented litigants. The request includes six positions in the Judicial Council, two in IT, two attorneys who specialize in civil law to make sure that our information in this rapidly changing area is current and accurate, and a senior analyst and administrative assistant. An assistant to providing increased access to justice, this proposal will avoid costs in clerk's offices and in the courtroom, and litigants will be better prepared for settlement conferences, court hearings, and trials. I can answer any questions, and Bonnie Hoff is also on the line.
Ms. Huff is with us. Any questions? All right, seeing none. Go ahead.
Will I go on to the next one?
Yes, language access.
Okay. So this is proposal 2220, language access efforts in the California courts. California has approximately 1,800 certified and registered court interpreters who perform around 1 million interpretations each year. And this proposal requests $15 million in general funds in fiscal year 2022 and ongoing. The request reflects the Judicial Council staff's projection that in fiscal year 2022, expenditures for the court interpreter services will exceed the current appropriation of $130 million by approximately $15 million, which is the request. The proposal also reflects approximately $2 million to replace an obsolete Oracle database that supports the Court Interpreter Data Collection System, CIDCS. The current database, as far as we can tell, what our research shows is that it was created 16 years ago, and all changes have been made manually since then. So we're asking for funding for a cloud-based platform that would better support the work of the courts and the interpreters by adding capacity, functionality, increasing our ability to do data collection and integration and compliance and development of new court interpreter scheduling system. This request finally includes a request for three positions in information technology, two and one in the Center for Families, Children and the Courts.
Thank you, Ms. Deppner. Are there questions for Ms. Deppner? All right, hearing none. Ms. Deppner, thank you for that.
Thank
and thank you.
You
for everything you're doing for us. We really, really
thank you. Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Curran, are you with us?
I am with you, Judge Rubin. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Thank you. So we'll be covering with you items 06, 07, and 08. That's our sex offender registration, collaborative court program, and company to stand trial evaluators. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Judge Rubin and members of the committee. I'm Shelley Curran. I'm the director of the Criminal Justice Services Office. The first BCC that I'd like to present to the committee is 2206, and it addresses sex offender registry. In 2017, legislature passed a bill, SB 384, that allowed registered sex offenders to petition the courts to have their registration status change. It created three different tiering systems. We anticipate that it's going to create a significant amount of workload for the courts, as DOJ has projected that around 40,000 people who are currently registered with the state of California under Penal Code Section 290 are eligible. And based upon the experiences with Megan's Law when that first went into effect, we anticipate that we could see as many as three times of the number of people who request a tiering change. And so we're looking at nearly 100,000 people who could possibly be petitioning the courts to have their registration status changed. And so with that BCC, we're requesting about $30 million one-time funding to be expended over the next 2 years.
Any questions for Ms. Curran regarding that BCP or BCC? All right, seeing none, go ahead, Ms. Curran, on to the Collaborative Court.
Collaborative Courts is number 2207. This is a request that the committee also saw last year. It's $15 million in the first year, $30 million in the second year, and what it essentially does is expands and creates ongoing funding and permanent funding for collaborative justice courts. This is not, collaborative justice courts is something that I think all of the committee members are very familiar with. People understand the intensive nature of these courts and the increased workload that the courts have. And so what the committee is seeking is to have ongoing sustained funding so that courts are able to operate and continue to get the successes that they received in terms of outcomes, successful outcomes for collaborative justice court participants.
All right, any questions for Ms. Curran about that? Yes, collaborative court programs are money intensive, but they also yield other savings elsewhere to the communities that we don't want to lose sight of. Thank you. And then on the dash 08.
Yes, this is my last proposal that I'm bringing before the committee this afternoon, and it addresses the great need for competency evaluators. Petitions for incompetent to stand trial have increased over the last several years. We see an incredible range throughout the courts when it comes to both the availability of psychologists and psychiatrists, additionally the amount that courts are charged. And so what we're trying to do is get a steady stream of funding in order to address some of these issues that the courts are facing as they are addressing this increased workload.
Right.
It's also something that the committee saw last year.
Right. Any questions for Ms. Curran on that from any of the members? All right, not seeing any. Ms. Curran, thank you, as always, for all your hard work, and thank you for being here today. Okay. She left.
Great.
Okay. All right, let's move on now. Ms. McCormick joins us, and she is going to be handling items 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 on the budget change concepts list. Ms. McCormick, welcome. I see you there. Join us.
Thank you, Judge Rubin and members of the committee. Facility Services is responsible for 460 court facilities with over 2,150 courtrooms across the state and approximately 29 million gross square feet. We process an average of 6,000 service work orders monthly and $100 million in facility modifications and deferred maintenance annually, and are constructing 10 new courthouses with a cost of more than $1.3 billion. The largest challenge to our program is the age of the portfolio, with 37% of the court facilities over 50 years in age and nearing the end of their useful life. The seven budget concepts we put before you request funding to continue facilities' multi-pronged strategy to ensure facility resilience and reliability. The first one is the trial court capital outlay funding. for 22-23. It requests ongoing funding for one project that is currently included in the 21-22 budget and three additional projects. In 2019, we completed an extensive reassessment of the portfolio and have 80 projects on our list, which total almost $13 billion. The advantage of new capital is they do eliminate deferred maintenance by consolidating or replacing facilities. The projects that are proposed for the 22-23 budget are ongoing would be the construction phase for the Ukiah Mendocino Courthouse and a new project for the Butte Juvenile an addition and a addition into the San Bernardino Dependency Court, and then a new 7-courtroom courthouse for Fort Ord in the Monterey Court. I'm available for questions.
Any questions for Ms. McCormick on item 09? All right, seeing none. And just so, let me just remind the presenters, just so people are actually very actively engaged, but you wrote really good concepts. They're very detailed, and that was very helpful to us. And so a lot of the questions I think we might have are already been answered. But just there you go. All right, Ms. McCormick, item 10.
Item 10 is for the Courts of Appeal Maintenance Program. Components of this are currently included in a combined trial court Courts of Appeal Maintenance Governor's budget item. So it is feasible that portions of this concept could be rescinded. In the 21-22 budget, there is $1.1 million ongoing O&M and $1.5 million for deferred maintenance. This proposal requests $2.1 million for ongoing O&M and $8.7 million for deferred maintenance. We did a thorough facility conditions assessments during our reassessment, and the $8.7 million is for deferred maintenance in the three JCC-owned facilities.
Any questions for Ms. McCormick on that? All right, seeing none, go ahead, Ms. McCormick, on item 11.
Okay, 2211 is for the trial court, and this is deferred maintenance. I know a lot of these are sounding the same. So there are components of this one that are in the governor's budget, but we, as part of our reassessment and our facility conditions assessment, we have a backlog of deferred maintenance of $5.2 billion. Currently, there is $30 million identified in the 21-22 governor's budget. $28.5 million of that would be for the trial courts and $1.5 million for the courts of appeal. This request requests an additional $100 million, as well as three positions to manage that work. And we're requesting that the $100 million be ongoing due to our $5 billion backlog.
All right, any questions from Ms. McCormick? All right, go ahead.
Okay, the next one is the Court Facilities Trust Fund, which funds 95% of our operations and maintenance budgets. This proposal is a repeat of one that is currently included in the 21-22 budget. If that is approved, this particular proposal could be rescinded. So it includes $52.3 million for ongoing operations and maintenance, and one-time money of $115,000.
All right, any questions on that one? I know we approved that one last year, and it was included, but any questions in any of that? All right, then we'll wait and see how this one fares in the May revise. All right, go ahead, Ms. McCormick, next one.
Okay, the next one is facility modification prioritizations and costs. These are facility modifications. It requests $35 million ongoing for facility mods. Currently, we have about $65 million in funding ongoing. Some of that is sunsetting, so this will make up for that as well as bridge the gap. There has not been an increase in facility modification funding for 10 years or so. And this year we are very tight on our money to the point where we've had to freeze all urgent projects. Only emergency projects are able to be funded this year. So we are definitely in need of a boost to our facility modifications budget.
All right. Questions for Ms. McCormick on this one? Looking at the members. I do not see any questions. Ms. McCormick, go ahead.
Okay. The 2214 is the San Diego Hall of Justice facility modernization. This is a facility in City of San Diego that is a county managed, county owned facility that the Judicial Council has a 40% equity stake in. They are proposing to do a major modernization of elevators, escalators, and their HVAC system. We have shared costs per our joint occupancy agreements. Our contribution would be approximately $26 million that we could parcel out over 3 years.
Any questions for Ms. McCormick? Maybe it would help Ms. McCormick to guide the committee. Were we not to get our share, what would happen?
The county would probably be unable to complete the project. So that would, you know, basically increase the or decrease the resiliency and reliability, essentially. Elevators, escalators break down frequently. So, you know, it becomes a large challenge for the county to be able to, you know, they'd only be able to fund 60% of their project. We have our obligation is to pay for 40%.
Okay, thank you. Any questions based on that from any of the members? All right, seeing none, Ms. McCormick on our water conservation. Concept.
And this is a kind of a two-for benefit on this particular proposal. We're looking to put some leak detection on water and for water conservation, but it has a secondary effect of being able to detect any leaks, and that is one of the major costs that we find in our emergency projects under our facility modifications. It's a $1.7 million request. And essentially it installs water meter logging data and software to do some analysis to determine whether or not buildings are leaking or if water is flowing.
All right, so we have a question from Judge Hopp. Go ahead.
Yeah, is that 1.7 million for like every courthouse in the state or just particular ones or?
For 160 of the courthouses, and we have approximately 200 courthouses. So there is a criteria to establish you know, which ones are greatest risk.
Because that seems a relatively small number for the benefit you described.
Yeah, it would be a significant benefit because, you know, one water leak in, you know, a large building can cost $7 or $8 million to repair.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. When we say courthouses, is it trial courthouses or does it include the appellates as well? I don't remember.
These are for trial courts.
Yep. Thank you. All right. Any other questions for Ms. McCormick?
I would just like to thank Pella. As you can see, just by the breadth of issues that she's presenting here, Her portfolio is huge, requires great expertise, and I just would like to thank Pella and her team for doing a wonderful job, because I see it daily, but many members don't, and to know that not only is she in charge of construction, but also making sure that roofs don't leak in 58 counties, it's a daunting task, and you do it well. So thank you, Pella.
Well, thank you, Justice Hill.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Are there other questions or comments for Ms. McCormick? Seeing none, Ms. McCormick, thank you so much.
And thank you, Judge Ruby.
Justice Hill in thanking you for all the hard work you're doing. Very much. Thank you for being with us this afternoon as well.
Thank you very much.
All right. We are now moving on. Is Ms. Pettit here? I thought I saw you.
I am here.
You are here. I can almost not hear you. Maybe it's me. All right, and Ms. Pettit is going to cover the next four. And we also have Judge Brody is, yes, he never left, he's still here, to help with this. And this is items 17, 18, 19, and 26. We sort of grouped those together. And with those, let me ask Ms. Pettit if you'd start with our Judicial Branch Office of Information Security concept.
Actually, you know what? Judge Brody had some words of wisdom to provide to us, so if you want to turn it over to him.
Okay.
That's a big statement. I don't know if I can live up to that. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about technology. And one of the focuses of this last year really has been, of the technology committee, has been helping courts use technology to just keep their operations moving, and that has been that's been successful by and large. But certainly, it has not been it hasn't always been easy, and it has also revealed more acutely gaps that we knew were there in the various technology maturity levels of our 58 trial courts, especially the. $25 million in modernization money that we got for the current budget year, and that is also included in next year's budget, the 21-22 budget, that has gone a long way towards being able to make some of those improvements. And we expect that by the end of this budget year, we'll be able to show some real concrete gains from that initial $25 million in funding. So that's part of our budget advocacy piece, if you will, is to let us show the legislature, to let us show finance, this is what we've actually accomplished with the money. It's not abstract. It's not theoretical. They're real gains that have paid off for court users across the state. So we mindful of the fact that budget change proposals, you know, that we can only present so many. We really tried to focus as a committee on the highest priority items, the ways we can move the branch forward most effectively, and Ms. Pettit can break down the budget change proposals we landed on.
And before we move on, just a thank you from the committee to Judge Brody and Ms. Pettit for the letter from the Judicial Branch, Judicial Council Technology Committee, prioritizing their proposals and helping explain them. So thank you for that. I think all the members got it. And with that, Ms. Pettit.
Absolutely. So the first proposal, which is 22-17, is one that we saw last year. Again, one of the things that we've recognized, even with the modernization money, is that security is something that is kind of like a utility. It's a requirement. It's like water. It's like air, heat. It's a fundamental function for what we do today, especially through the pandemic. We are seeing bad actors coming, trying to get government agencies regularly on a weekly basis, not necessarily to us, but across the government sectors. So this continues to pursue that maintaining and maturing and, you know, keeping up to speed as much as we can with security. It's a multi-year plan. So it starts off, you know, building our security protocols and then moving it forward over the next several years. It is also in alignment with the security work stream, the ITAC security work stream, which we will be giving the outcome presentation to the council over the next couple of months and where we are in that particular area. So that is the very first one that we have on information security.
Any questions for either Judge Brody or Ms. Pettit on that, on item 17? All right, seeing none, go ahead, Ms. Pettit, on item 18.
Yes, so this one we're actually really excited about. We're calling it a placeholder. It's more of an educational opportunity to let you guys know something that we're working on. In partnership with many state agencies, including CAL FIRE, the State Parks Group, we are working on an RFP right now to provide rural internet services to those counties that may have challenges with internet connectivity. One of the things that we've recognized during this pandemic is that many of these courts have not, you know, enough internet bandwidth or throughput to be even able to provide remote video. And so we are looking for options to enhance that so we can actually have redundant internet connections. Some of the challenges we've seen is that, you know, in counties that have one internet pipe in, it goes down because of a fire, they lose all connectivity to the rest of the state. So it's a really important opportunity. We don't know how this is going to shape out. They're finishing the RFP right now. We are actually one of the core providers and rankers in this evaluation. They're using our courthouses as a baseline for what it would look like. So we will most likely, the end result of this will be a combination or a partnership with other state agencies on how we would deploy this rural internet access. So it's a great opportunity. It's something that the small courts has been a number one priority for them for several years.
That is very exciting. All right, any questions or comments for Ms. Pettit on that? All right, seeing none, Ms. Pettit. Oh, wait, I saw one. Judge Mormon.
Hi, Heather. this is really exciting. Can you just give us a little bit better understanding of the timing going forward?
Yeah, so what CAL FIRE is really pushing this, they want this to RFP to be completed before fire season starts. I'm not so sure we have a fire season in California anymore, but that is their goal, so that they can start selecting the vendors to start deploying these this summer. Their goal is to start really rolling this out this summer. The benefit of this is that we already, facilities did a wonderful job at designing our contracts. So we actually have lease spaces or lease clauses that, let's say CAL FIRE wanted to put an antenna on top of one of our buildings, they could. So those are things that we are looking at and trying to find the most important way to maximize this. And then we're focusing on we've got, I believe it's 13 counties that really have challenges right now. So we're focusing on those in particular. So the goal is to get the contracts initiated, you know, late spring this summer, and then we'll start working out with the plan and getting the costing, because it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out, you know, if CAL FIRE wants to put something in a building, and we're the only ones who have a building that is part of this, they're going to want to work with us. So it's going to take some time during the summertime. But I would say, I would hope that, you know, the goal is over the next 12 to 24 months, we start rolling these out immediately. That is the desire and plan.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions? And thank you for that question, Judge Woman. Any other questions or comments? All right, Ms. Pett, the next one.
All right, so this was the big one. It's our number one priority. It is ongoing and permanent funding for the judicial branch modernization. We are taking the $25 million. We have decided it should be include all of the branch. So it includes the trial courts, Supreme Court, and courts of appeal. We've also included an accompaniment of staffing that will actually help manage the program. So some of the lessons that we've learned for this $25 million, and I think one of the things that would be great for this committee is, in the next, you know, year or next few months, we give you guys an update of actually the work that we've done on this $25 million, you know, budget. But we need specific resources to assist the courts. Our focus has been on remote video. Our focus has been on getting the courts up and running in a way so public can get better access. And so, you know, as Judge Brody mentioned, one of the most important things for us is looking at the roadmap of where these courts are today and where they need to be in the future. So when we presented to you last time on our methodology, we told you we had collected a bunch of data on this. We now realize, or at least I do when I did this analysis, that it's going to take us a good 5 to 10 years to get some of these courts where we need them to be, looking at the digital court and offering multiple channels of access to the branch. And so this really is the proposal for ongoing. Now, what's not included in here and what's not on this list is that we've actually, as our first set of data and reports, we're getting data back from courts on remote video hearings, how many, the case types, interpretation, you know, all of those things that we are now looking at and the legislature's requested. So we're grabbing all this data, but we don't really have a solid plan for data analytics. So I am working with JCIT as well as the technology committee is working with the Office of Court Research and the Executive Office, a potential another BCC that relates specifically to data management and data analytics. So when you look at this, it partners with this modernization funding, but it's not ready yet because we're just starting to collect this and figure out what our true needs are. So I do actually have a question for you all. Would you rather see this BCC as an independent or, and maybe this is kind of philosophical because we've done this before in the past, would you us rather do a bucket of kind of technology BCP overall? Because I know that we've talked about this in the past. Last time we did this, we had one IT modernization BCP, or would you want us to see them kind of independently?
I'll take a stab at the answer, maybe Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic, or Mr. or Ms. Mueller want to jump in. I think we feel that, I mean, if we think it's better to combine them, we do. And I think sometimes seeing kind of more of the details of them can be helpful, but you may ask Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic, or Ms. Mueller to jump in.
Thank you, Judge. I agree. I think for now, it would be good to have each piece independently identified and justified. And then at a subsequent meeting, we can go ahead and talk about potentially pairing things, which ones marry best moving forward.
And Ms. Cutting brought up a great point. I probably should have said at the outset, which is the committee does feel free maybe to use the term. I think we feel that strategically when we see things that should be grouped together, that we would repropose it as a one BCP, but having it broken apart, I should have said that.
Okay, so then I would expect that you will probably see another version, another BCC that is being worked on right now with the team that relates specifically kind of to these data requests, this data management plan that we're having, that we're working on right now as this data is coming in. And I think that's it, except for the last one.
Any other questions on item 19? All right, why don't you hit item 26, the modernization for the Supreme Court and Courts of Appeal.
Yes, so this actually belongs to the Courts of Appeal and Supreme Court, but it actually partners with the modernization grant. One of the things that we found, and we talked about it last year, but we decided to break it up, that there are specific resources needed for the Courts of Appeal and the Supreme Court. Right now, they have facilities to manage, technology to run on-prem, on the premise. They have all this technology they run for the courthouses, and they have no staff to do the work. So we are at a situation right now that we can modernize their branch-wide solutions, like their case management system, but they have no people to actually do the work at the courthouse. And so this proposal is, like I said, in partnership with the modernization, but it is to put people on the ground there at the Courts of Appeal and Supreme Court to manage their technology, whether it's their network, their desktops, the audio-visual solutions within the courtrooms. So when we do look at best practices and actual staffing needs in a traditional IT sense, they are short 9 people across all their facilities. So this is to fill that gap so that they can actually do their work and modernize individually at each court facility.
What are they doing now for those services?
It is a very ad hoc basis, and it takes a really long time to get things done. They have, many of them have just technicians who go in and are able to kind of break fix things, but then they usually ask the JC, and we'll get to it when we can get to it, which is a really hard thing because sometimes we don't have the resources available either. And I think that that is the challenge. And as you will see, many of them don't have modern technology or they don't have modern systems, which they really do need. You know, they're running old email systems, or we have to upgrade them into ours. And so it's just, it takes a lot longer to get things done than what it should. And the support level for our public is not there at all, which is the other piece of this.
I didn't hear that last statement. Can you say it again?
The support people for the public. So if you're doing remote hearings, or there, it's not there, it's non-existent. So we have kind of filled that gap during this pandemic. But you know, we have senior engineers working at that level, where really we need to have the right people doing that work.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Pettit on that last one? You'll go ahead, Judge Mormon.
Maybe a question, maybe just an observation, but it would seem to me that through some of the modernization efforts that we've already undertaken at the Court of Appeal level, such as the Transcript Assembly Program, and I know Justice Hill has educated me over the years about how the Courts of Appeal are sort of sharing resources where they can. I'm reading into this proposal that the nine positions ITACS identified as being necessary cover the entire Courts of Appeal. I don't know if it's and the Supreme Court, or whether we have two levels of people or what, but we can have people in one location that are assisting Courts of Appeal in other physical locations. So it's a branch-wide approach to solve the problem, correct?
Well, they're actually in each of the various regions. So it is for the Supreme Court as well. So you have people in San Diego's region, for example, or in the LA region. So they are dispersed, but they need to be physically on site, many of them do, which if it's remote, we can handle a lot of that. But the problem is that with your iPhone support or your actual desktop support, they need people on site and they don't have a lot of that. That is the challenge. And the other thing is that they don't have any supervisors, and this proposal actually includes someone to manage that staff. They are currently not being managed. Only two of the courts actually have management staff at the Courts of Appeal. So it makes it very difficult for getting actual work done, prioritized, projects rolled out. So something that would be a traditional IT model. I hope that answers your question.
It's really, yes, it does. It kind of clarifies really what I was picturing. We're really trying to build sort of a personnel structure to support modernization technology.
Yes, exactly.
And that personnel structure just hasn't existed before because, Correct. We live in a new world.
Yep. They have no funding for technology personnel. They have had to take money from existing just operations in order to address any of their technology needs, which has been a challenge for them.
And whenever you're dealing with ad hoc solutions, some of that's inevitable, right? Because you have a problem that, you just have to kind of improvise your way to a fix. But a series of ad hoc solutions that aren't centrally kind of managed, you frankly get to some of the problems that we see facing trial courts now, which is just a lack of consistency that just it adds confusion to the public. It adds administrative overhead internally. So having a more coherent management structure will make things more efficient, and will help us. It'll help us move forward just more strategically.
And where did this fall into your priorities?
So this actually came, so we looked at it and evaluated it aligns. It actually is part of the presentation from the Courts of Appeal and the APJ. So it just came under ours, but it came from their advisory committee that we reviewed and made sure it aligns.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
All right, any other questions for Ms. Pettit or Judge Brody? Or if anybody wants to single out Justice Hill or Justice Fujisaki, you could. All right. Seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Pettit. Thank you, Judge Brody, again
for the
outstanding presentation. And we really appreciate what both of you are doing to help bring our branch, if not into the 21st century, at least the late 20th. So
yeah, we'll bring it up to the 90s.
There you go.
All right, take care. Thank you.
All right, moving on then to item 21. This is Mr. Schnurkfeil and talking about additional legal services office for public access work. And there he is. Go ahead, Mr. Schnurkfeil.
Hello, and good afternoon, everyone. So this will be very brief. Legal Services has this BCP proposal for you to consider, which is essentially asking for additional staff to help us address a significantly growing demand for 10-500 work, the public access work. Legal Services has been servicing the 10-500 work since 2016. As the concept will show you, there's a a graph there that shows that, you know, when we first started this back in 2016, we handled about 500 matters. We're now approaching 2,000, and it's simply overtaking the work of lawyers in our office that really are being taken away from other core functions that they need to do. And we're finally finding that it's just getting to a point where it's getting overwhelming, and we would be better served by actually having dedicated staff, larger staff, to deal with the growing number of requests. The services that are provided are primarily for judicial counsel requests, but we also provide services to the trial courts and assisting them with responding to the 10-500 requests to the courts. We're also now starting to see, as you might expect through time, litigation that's arising out of the 10-500 requests. We've seen now in the last year, I think, three challenges. We didn't have any for the first couple of years, but again, that takes further work and further services. With that, it's pretty simple. We're asking for four staff members, supervisor, another attorney, another two attorneys, and a analyst to help run the program. So I'll take any questions if there are any.
Any questions for Mr. Schnurfile? I see none. Mr. Schnurfile, thank
yes,
you
sir.
For being so efficient and helpful. And thank you for the concept. It was super clear. Thank you.
Good to see you all. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. All right, we're going to wrap up this afternoon's presentations on budget change concepts with Judge Conklin, who will present us with items 22, 23, 24, 25, and I know he'll be his usual efficient and clear self. Judge Conklin.
Thanks. I'll do my best to be that. I'm in the wrap-up position, as you say. I'm also joined by Rebecca Fleming. She's here to assist in each of these. So I just wanted to take a quick second to help everybody understand how we got to these concepts. Like many of the other concepts you've heard today, these impact the statewide trial courts. So while some are perhaps more particular to individual entities, these budget change proposals affect the trial courts as a whole. So what TCBAC did was its members were assigned, and I thank the members for this, to reach out to all the trial courts. Most members took one, two, or three courts, reached out to the trial courts, either CEOs or PJs, to ask for input or perspective on their concerns about statewide budget. And then we had a meeting in January where we went through all of those. And they're actually summarized in your materials. I think it's at page 99 of your materials. There's a quick memo that lays them all out. This process we felt was of assistance to us and hopefully to all the trial courts as an all-inclusive and collaborative process for those courts, just to make sure their concerns were addressed and vetted. And I don't mean to imply by our ultimate decision that any of those concerns were not viewed by TCBAC as important or significant, but like all of you, we have to make some choices about which percolate to the top given current circumstances and concerns. So the four that you have before you today are the four that were voted on by the TCBAC members as a whole as those that we felt were most significant at the current time. The first one is hopefully already out of the chute and maybe, depending on the May revise, something that's already been addressed, and that is restoration of the 2021 budget reductions. So the money that was taken away from us, as Zlatko talked about at the very beginning, and perhaps some optimism about, at least in the short term, some restoration. And I think, as you all know, well, and we're so appreciative of the governor and the legislative tentative agreement to restore these funds. So if these funds are restored in the amount of about $176.9 million, then this may even could be withdrawn. But if not, we would like it as a substantial BCP going forward. In case that changes, though, we're very hopeful that it does not. So that stands alone from, for instance, workload. I'll talk about that in a few moments. But this is essentially a restoration of dollars that were cut from us in last year's budget. Rick, if there's anything you want to add or any questions?
Nothing to add. Thank you, Judge.
Okay, great. So now we're going to move to the trial court workload formula gap funding to 100%. This is concepts 2223. This requests a little bit larger than a lot of the other BCPs you've heard, $677.4 million. for ongoing general fund to all the trial courts at 100% of their workload formula. I'm not going to take any time in reviewing workload except to say, as probably broadly, yet hopefully accurately as possible, these are funds that come to the trial courts based upon their workload. Currently, trial courts are budgeted at about 74% of their workload, and this would help us increase that total budget to the trial courts. We do recognize, and we also obviously appreciate, the proposed $72.2 million in new funding, and that's the way it would be distributed as new funding in the governor's budget. That might change those that workload funding gap a little bit, may bring it closer, which is obviously more beneficial to all the courts. But this $677.4 million, if approved, would narrow that gap significantly. Rebecca, anything you wanted to add here?
I would just add that we, at our lowest point, we do have a court that is only at 66.5% of their workload at this point. And for this proposal, 53 of the 58 trial courts would be benefited. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Fleming and Judge Conklin, is there a relationship between items 22 and 23? As I say, if 22 occurs, would it affect the amount in 23?
So 22 being the restoration?
Yeah.
Well, it would affect, Rebecca, it might be better, it would affect the courts, once we factor that in, it would affect the court's funding level concerning their workload. So it would affect that calculation, but it's essentially absolutely separate from the workload funding gap. This is a restoration of funds taken away. Rebecca, can you clarify that
better? Yeah, and I cannot speak better than you, Judge Conklin, but what I will say is that any results from this year's proposal from the governor's office would require us to recalculate these numbers. There is a gap. There still is a gap that will exist. There will not be 100% funding for all trial courts. And in fact, there are continued analytics that we need to do. Fortunately, with the efforts around the data analytics right now, we are able to pull more information about things like the increased time to disposition, the increased time to call a jury trial, things like that, that we'll want to do more research around and continue to work on this workload formula. And as this committee knows, there is a committee that does nothing but focus on the funding methodology around this formula. And so annually we take input from the trial courts as well as identify issues that come through the legislation. And so while we will recalculate those numbers with the activity from this year, we will still have a gap and continued efforts around this.
And if anything, I hesitate to say this, but I don't think anything good comes from COVID, but if there's any lessons we've learned, it's data analytics. And this, I think, has really given us some motivation behind obtaining those analytics, and the trial courts have been excellent in really stepping up to get us that data.
That is the case. All right, our next one.
The next one is 2224, and this is an annual automatic inflationary adjustment for the Consumer Price Index, CPI. So this is independent of the workload adjustments we just talked about. And this is intended to recognize that all trial courts, regardless of their funding levels, so as Rebecca noted, while we're doing our best to bring all those courts as close to the midline as possible, some courts are lower and some courts are higher on their overall funding. But every one of those courts every year, I hope I'm not speaking too broadly, just like all of us do on our family budgets, we're affected by hard costs that just go up every year. And just by example, postage, things like that the courts have to pay for regardless of their workload. This is somewhat reflected in the current budget governor's proposal, as the 72.6 is also reflective of the CPI. So we would ask, and we're asking, that this BCC actually make that an ongoing adjustment. So the CPI increase each year would then benefit or provide to the courts the ability to address those hard costs every year, given the increase in CPI. And this year, it's a request of $162.2 million. You're muted, Judge Rubin.
All right, thank you. I was just saying, any questions for Ms. Fleming or Judge Conklin on the CPI BCC? All right, seeing none. Wait. Yes, Judge Warman.
I don't mean to state the obvious, but I take it if this ends up being in the final approval category, it'll be rescinded.
If it is maintained
in the governor's budget this year.
Well, the governor's budget doesn't specifically define it as a CPI. So by the governor's budget for the new money to the courts is very closely tied to CPI for this year. But it's not a specific, and Zlatko could probably, or John, clarify this. But while the money this year is the same as the CPI, this BCP would make that a hard definition each year. Zlatko, is that?
And Judge Mormon, you're getting it. What we're asking for is a process in which this occurs annually. What the budget proposal is, a similar amount, I mean, the exact same amount, but not defined as a annual CPI process. They use that math, but then proposed it as a sort of operational cost funding. We are looking for a process that this is an annual adjustment going forward, that CPI is used and adjusting the budgets. So there's a distinction. So while the dollar amount would be adjusted, the concept of pursuing an automatic adjustment process is the key in this proposal.
Judge Hoff.
That makes sense. It's a distinction. This was a one-time. There's no guarantee next year that the Department of Finance will do the same based on what they did this year. We're asking it to be part of their budget building process, that they include that in the governor's budget every year.
Mr. Wardlaw, then Judge Hoff.
It's just worth noting that in conversations with finance about the $72.2 million, that you know, the initial governor's narrative was tied to workload. They have also been signaling that it's a cost of doing business increase. And so I think there is a positive sign from finance as to the intent behind these dollars. And we're very hopeful that in our subsequent request that would continue this conversation moving forward. While I would expect that we may not get it every year, there would be some level of allowance for periodic adjustments upward, recognizing the true cost of doing business, whether it's in every other year or annual adjustment. That's really what we're looking for, and we are seeing at the staff level some reception to that discussion.
I think that gets at sort of what I was going to ask about, but I've got one other question. Does any other agency, obviously we're not an agency, we're a separate branch, but does any other agency get that kind of annual CPI related increase?
They typically request it and are typically denied that kind of treatment. So there was a past practice within the administration where there was recognition and adjustments, but it's been a long time since they've done that with any frequency statewide. Zlatko may have additional input.
No, I mean, without going too far in history, there was the time where we had what was called the State Appropriations Limit Adjustment, which reflected both the cost of doing business and workload increase, because it reflected CPI and population increases. And that was shut down. Those kinds of automatic adjustments were shut down when the Great Recession happened throughout state government. There were indexed adjustments in health and human services areas. But you know, we don't enjoy the same process of budget adjustments, say, that happen for employees at the state level when they negotiate salary increases. Those dollars are funded in the budget rather than inserting themselves into the negotiation process. The administration has proposed pots of money that then are used at the discretion of the trial courts to meet their needs. So I think in a roundabout way, not typical to have this, but we're not typical either in needing funding to address our cost increases.
Yeah, sadly, I've been around long enough to remember when Sal was included in the budget.
All right.
So can I just
go ahead, Justice Fujisaki.
No,
Okay, I'm sorry. So this is probably, there's an obvious answer, and I just want to make sure that I understand. So even, so if this does make it in and if it's approved, it's, and even though it's automatic, it's still contingent on annual funding, on appropriations and such, or what's the benefit of having, I can understand what the benefit is of having this approved, but is it still not a sure thing in terms of getting the actual funding of it every year?
Justice Fujitaki, I'll take a crack at responding to that. So yeah, there's certainly no guarantees on a continuance of this. What we're really looking for, though, is an agreement with the administration that there is a price associated with doing business that does escalate, and on some regular schedule that we would get a recognition and a bump in funding for that. And so this BCP continues the conversation. We had one last year, as you very well know. The dollar was there in the budget, and they linked it right to the same percentage, the CPI percentage. But we have not gotten to the point of an agreement, if you will, on structured increases going forward. So this just continues that discussion with the administration.
And if I may, and I'm sorry, Judge Morton, I just wanted to add to that, just sort of from a low-level perspective, the frustration that we keep hearing from trial courts is, and I want to be careful here, because we're so appreciative of the new money that comes to us, but new money's come in, but it's not true dollars, because then the courts also have these hard costs that keep going up. So it's, again, the example I used in many of our budgets, you get a raise, but you really don't, because your healthcare costs go up or other costs go up. So this would assist the trial courts in being able to at least keep the treading water, so to speak, each year with those hard costs going up every year, and they'd be accounted for. And I'm sorry, Judge Mormon, I didn't mean to step on your question.
No, you didn't. You know, of course, you never do. You're actually kind of a good mind reader. But I think I have a similar question to Justice Fujisaki. And I'm just having trouble articulating it. I'm feeling a little thick, so I'm sorry. So I'm just looking at the budget change proposal that for 2021 that is in the governor's budget, albeit we're not done with the process. And if the $72 million remains in the budget for 2021-22, then does this budget change proposal sort of change shape to, and by that I'm asking, I understand we're trying to get an agreement about methodology going forward, so we're not just attacking this or making the ask year after year, you know, piece after piece. If I get that part, but does that go along with then asking for a certain sum of money in the 22-23 budget year? Do you understand what I'm asking?
I think so. I think John, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I think I do. The incremental adjustment. So with the 72.2 million, that brings us to a certain point. And as time is ticking on, the true cost of running the business of the courts continues to tick up. And so right. I think that the idea there is you would have another request moving forward that recognizes the incremental gap that exists and furthers the conversation about the need for this on a more structured, agreed upon frequency where we wouldn't have to have necessarily budget proposals coming forward. It would be kind of baked into the budget development process on the natural through the multi-year budgeting practice.
Okay, so can I ask a follow-up, please?
Yes, of course.
Then is the best approach to try to get buy-in on the methodology for as long as we can, or are we just shooting for 24-25 as the outside?
The way in which we will be able to continue the conversation with finance is through the BCP. And so this will get us in the door for another conversation next fall with the administration about this entire topic. And that's really the BCP is the vehicle to have that conversation, Judge. And so we do have to have a dollar tied to kind of the broader story of the request on an ongoing basis. And that's what this proposal would do twofold. One, it would address the incremental gap that we're seeing dollar-wise, as well as have a discussion about the broader ask that we're making that would continue into multi-years that would no longer require a BCP.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying the language of the BCP itself at the end reflected in changes to the CPI for 2021, 21, 22, 22, 23, and then annually thereafter. So
right, continuing, I guess that's what, yeah. So it does, okay. I think you've answered the question. Thank you.
We do have some existing agreements in which we did pursue budget changes and they became through the discussion, I put in quote unquote automatic, like our trial court trust fund revenues that have declined over the years, the backfill of those is now part of the normal budget process. That's an important one. The health and retiree benefit costs, that is now something we pursued, put in a proposal, they accepted our methodology, and now it's part of the normal budget process. And you notice you don't see a $100 million backfill BCP or a $50 million benefit BCP. The hope would be in this case is that once the methodology is approved, plus the dollars for 22, 23 for the value of the CPI for that year, it then is an ongoing process and doesn't need, as John said, BCPs because it's part of the building of the budget for us.
Right. No, and I get it. I just was, sometimes the process is a little confusing, but I think it's a great idea. Wonderful.
And that's the quote of the day. It's sometimes the process is a little confusing. Welcome to the budget. Thank you.
I think our takeaway is it also helps our negotiators get in the door and to have something to talk about. So good news on that. And then finally, Judge Conklin,
yep.
Our MOE backfill.
Yep. This has been a tough nut to crack every year. It's a very specific fund amount of money, $48.3 million. To the ongoing general fund, and even though it impacts, well, significant number, 38 of 58 courts, so not all of them, it benefits all of the trial courts if finally accomplished because it stabilizes the TCTF, the Trial Court Trust Fund. As I said, this has been a tough nut to crack. It gets us way down in the weeds. I'm using all these phrases that I shouldn't be using, but the pros from Dover. So Rebecca, the CEOs, Kevin, who's on your committee, really have such a good handle on this, but to overgeneralize, there's a specific number of counties that have MOEs, maintenance of effort obligations, that they are responsible for every year, and that comes out of their dollars, and this would essentially take care of that and eliminate that finally for all those courts so they can get it off their backs, so to speak. I may have overgeneralized. Rebecca, do you want to do anything to clarify? Or John's with us too.
Yeah, Judge Conklin, I would just add that this is a very long conversation because it goes back to the very beginning of trial court funding. In AB 233 is where it was initially slated and set as an obligation to the counties. And over time, as those there were adjustments made that shifted those obligations to the corresponding courts. And those courts, those dollars were set based on the original conversations with those counties. And so the courts didn't have a voice in that situation. And so it's somewhat disproportionately distributed over 38 counties in the court. There is a significant interest in modernizing this, so to speak, by evening this out through the equity, through an equitable elimination of it. And there is a there is a significant feeling that this will be one of the most significant changes that could stabilize our funding and bring our structure to where we operate today. And so with that, I will say there is a number of courts that have reached out, and we have reached out to John and to the administration and offered to collaborate in compiling and writing this BCP. There's a significant number of courts that have been involved in the history of this, and we understand how complicated it is, but there is a strong support behind it, and I'll turn it over to John for any further comments.
Thank you, Rebecca. And yeah, I just wanted to thank the courts because it really their involvement and direct, input in the development, the writing of the BCPs has been very much appreciated. The CPI request that resulted in the $72.2 million in the governor's proposed budget was actually written by the courts. And this is absolutely encouraged, needed. The partnership is a good one, and just wanted to say my appreciation to the courts for their involvement.
As much as they appreciate budget services involvement as well, John, thank you.
And I just wanted to echo what Ms. Fleming said, that for those of you listening to this conversation from the public, the history of the maintenance of effort payments and how they were established and how they changed over time and where they are now is a very long and complicated one, and it continues to vex the branch.
Agreed. So if there's any further questions on that or any of these four?
Seeing none, I wanted to thank you, Judge Conklin and Ms. Fleming, for your willingness to be here today and to help us out. And this gives us a lot to think about and chat about in front of our meeting after the May revised drafts. Wait, Judge Mormon, did you have something? No, okay. Great, thank you both, and then, we appreciate that.
Good to see you all. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. All right. Are there any comments, thoughts about this? Closed session. All right. Seeing none, I feel like I've beaten all of you or something into submission. I did not. Great. All right. With that, we are going to adjourn this open portion of the meeting. And then I'm going to ask staff, let me do this. It's not a separate link. Is somebody cutting off the public line? Can somebody, Ms. Cohen?
Yeah, we'll do that right now. We'll stop the recording because you adjourned the meeting.
Okay.
Okay, we're off.
All right, we're no longer recording. And